When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit Ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.
Brought to you by the all-new 2014 Toyota Corolla.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles Bryant. Chuckers, you might know him as.
Sure.
There's a W in there somewhere.
Sure.
For Wayne.
Yeah.
Named after Wayne Coin. Right?
No.
We talked about that before.
Yeah, John Wayne.
Right.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm great, man. I am all over this NASA activity.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Good. Because it seems like all we hear about NASA these days is how they're having to shut down space programs.
Right.
That's, they do other stuff, which is cool.
Well, that's the impression I have is that they're kind of taking their field of vision from out into outer space and turning it planetward toward Earth.
Why not? That's where all the people are that are buying Big Macs.
Right. Well, if space exploration is going private, you got the Elon Musks and the Richard Bransons of the world saying, we got this, NASA.
Yeah.
You go do something else with all of your high-tech remote sensing equipment.
Right.
Then it makes sense that NASA would say, okay, we'll become the watchdog guardian of the planet. And that's what they've become. Plus, also, if you're the United States, using NASA's remote sensing equipment on Earth is a dynamite cover for intelligence gathering.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah. I mean, you have all sorts of satellites carrying out different functions, but really, all of them are taking pictures of the Earth 24/7.
Oh, I got you.
Highly detailed ones, too.
Huh.
You want to know about Russian troop formation? Ask NASA.
Yeah, you and the guys are sniffing out a volcano.
Sure. If you want to know what kind of sandwich Julian Assange had today, ask NASA.
Well, they don't need to ask NASA. Everyone knows that.
What?
Tuna fish.
Is that what his thing is?
Sure. Every day.
That's how he keeps his white mane white, him and Michio Kaku.
Yeah, the white mullet. Actually, it's not so mullety. It's just more of a mane.
Right. Mane.
Yeah.
For sure. Both of them have a mane.
A big helmet of hair.
So, Chuck, I guess the question we've posed today that I feel like we need to answer is, can NASA predict natural disasters? I think we can go ahead and answer and say, not yet.
Right.
But now that, again, they've kind of mothballed space exploration to an extent. I mean, we're still hitting Mars.
Yeah, yeah. They're not mothballing it.
But they've reached the point where they're like, okay, we've got all this really good equipment. Let's start monitoring Earth a little more because there's a lot of questions we have.
That's right.
Now they've reached this point where since the beginning of the 21st century, they've started conducting missions. They have planned ones that are just being started now, some that are coming in the next couple of years. And from all this data, they'll be able to analyze it and start to be able to predict natural disasters.
Right.
So they have this whole, like, toolbox, I guess, if you wanted to go into, like, corporate buzz speak of programs and missions that they're carrying out that will help them predict natural disasters pretty soon.
That's right. Not the low-hanging fruit.
Right.
They're just trying to reach out and play together with the Earth.
In the same space.
Yeah, in the same space.
Maybe Java Storm.
Boy, the corporate talk. Whew.
Yeah.
We shun that at all costs here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk about this. We talked about remote sensing. That is basically detecting energy reflecting from something When it's pointed out in space, like when you're looking for new planets, it's pointed out in space. When you point it on Earth, it's a heck of a lot closer.
Right.
So you can get more detail.
And they're using different kinds of detectors. They're detecting different kinds of energy, I should say, like microwave radiation, X-rays. It's not just like using your peepers.
Right.
That information can be translated into something we use our peepers to look at. But for they can use this equipment to sense all sorts of different stuff.
Yeah, and like you said, it's like mounted on aircraft, or it's part of a satellite, or is a satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's all up there looking back at you right now.
Yeah, so wave.
Yeah, or it's looking at the Earth. We're just the insignificant, tiny specks,
right,
crawling around on the Earth.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this is a kind of a big deal, you know. Like it makes sense. It's sensible what they're doing. It's a smart thing to do with NASA's equipment.
Sure. Yeah,
but it also really is. We're at the threshold of like a really big change in our understanding of our planet.
Yeah,
you know, like I think there's kind of a lot of assumptions that people make about our understanding of the planet that are just totally incorrect. Like, for example, I would have guessed that meteorologists and climatologists knew how tropical storms form.
Yeah.
They do not.
Yeah.
And from using things like, there's actually a project that was carried out in the summer of 2010 that was dedicated to studying this. It was called GRIP, Genesis and Rapid Intensification Processes.
That's right.
And for a couple of months, some NASA scientists flew around on a Gulfstream jet and took really precise measurements of what they believed were the beginnings of tropical storms to see how they form exactly.
Yeah, and the goal with pretty much everything that we're going to talk about today is early detection, because you can't stop a hurricane, you can't stop a volcano or an earthquake. But
like the old saying goes.
That's right. But if you know it's coming, then you can get people out of the way, you can thwart some of them to some degree.
Yeah, like anybody can point to a hurricane and be like, oh, there's a hurricane.
Yeah.
By then, it's a little too late.
If
you can point to the very beginnings, the cradle of the hurricane, the formation of a tropical storm, now you're talking about time that you have to warn people, like, you guys need to get out of here.
Yeah, and there is one really cool program they've had going since 2002 called GRACE. There's going to be a lot of acronyms today, by the way.
I love those.
Love them. The Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment.
This is my favorite one.
It's really cool. Basically, what they're doing... All right, well, let's step back a minute. Let's talk about Newton.
Okay.
Gravity depends on the mass of an object.
Right.
In the case of polar ice caps, the mass is changing. So if the mass is changing, the gravity is changing.
Right. So when the polar ice caps melt and turn to water and then flow toward the equator, they are often so big that they left it in depression on the Earth's surface. Once they're gone, that depression can be filled in. The mantle can fill back in that area, changing the mass in that particular part of Earth and hence changing the gravity, right?
Yeah, it's one estimate has between 2010 and 2011, the Greenland ice shield lost 224 gigatons of mass. So not only is that going to change the land formation and the mass, it's going to make the sea level rise at a rate of about 0.7 millimeters a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to change the makeup of the Earth.
Yep.
And so they have a couple of buddies, Tom and Jerry,
yeah,
that are in orbit, satellites, twin satellites, about 136 miles apart from each other.
Do you know why they're called Tom and Jerry?
Because they're chasing each other. They're, they're on the same orbit.
Yeah, exactly. A polar orbit.
Yeah, it's very cute.
So they're constantly going from the North Pole to the South Pole as the Earth spins below them, right?
That's right.
And they're taking measurements, two different types of measurements, but they're precisely separated from one another, and they're on precisely the same orbit.
Yeah.
So they can really, what they produce every 30 days is a full map of the gravitational field of Earth.
Yeah, and they've NASA. They always work with other people, it seems like, which is a good thing, to work with people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But they worked with a company in Germany to develop an ultra-precise distance measuring system that basically can measure within the precision what they say is one-tenth of the width of a hair.
That's pretty precise.
Yeah, so basically these things are flying, and between the two, they're measuring the distances and discrepancies between these two identical twin satellites, and that's information is being relayed back and analyzed.
Yeah, because the upside of this is, number one, the Earth is not a perfect sphere. We know that. I can't remember what we talked about that in. Oh, maps.
Yeah. So, potato?
Yeah. And the gravitational field is not perfectly round either. It's lower in some places, higher in other places, the force of gravity.
Yeah.
It's formed what in 1995 was coined the Potsdam gravity potato. And if you look it up now, there's some pretty cool artist rendering of what the Earth's magnetic field looks like in as a three-dimensional model.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So check that out. And that's been updated dramatically in the last couple of years thanks to this GRACE project.
Yeah, and the ultimate goal basically is to measure this gravitational field over time, see how it's changing with mm-hmm. kind of accuracy we've never had before, which will in turn inform us on climate-related junk.
Right. I mean, and is it just a correlation between like ice caps melting and a change in a gravitational field, or does
right.
that ice cap melting trigger that change in the gravitational field, which in turn has some other effect? So, there's a lot of, I think, understanding we can gain from knowing what the gravitational field is changing, how it's changing.
Yeah. Do you like using your GPS to get somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then this kind of information can go on to help GPS, because basically it's just going to improve the trajectories of these satellites, and everything is just more specific. It's like 100 times more detailed than they've ever had before. So that's going to help everything out from detecting climate change or temperature and like potential hurricanes and stuff to mm-hmm. like getting you to McDonald's.
Right.
You know?
Which is pretty important. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, Chuck, the tropical storms, you want to know how they think they form now?
No.
Well, I'm going to tell you. So the speed of waves on an ocean, if it matches the speed of the movement of some air above it, and an umbilical cord of warm, humid air can get into this little pillow sandwich, it forms this protective pouch. And from there, a convection current can start. And form into a tropical storm, which can then form into a hurricane. That's what they learned from the GRIP program.
Man, it seems like they would have known this stuff before then.
You'd think so.
You know?
But we're talking like 2010 when they're yeah. I don't even think it's been proven. I think that that's what they think based on the data from the 2010 experiment.
Yeah, aren't they still analyzing that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I imagine like that's got to be a pretty good field to get into now and in the next like 5-10 years analyzing NASA data.
Yeah, and just anything to do with the climate, probably.
Sure.
Don't you think?
Yeah, things that's changing. It's going to be gangbusters.
There's a lot of money in the weather.
Right.
All right, so that's tropical storms and hurricanes.
We didn't talk about the GPM project.
Oh, that's true. They're working with NASA's working with Japan and their NASA, which is called the Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency, or JAXA. And that is a global precipitation measurement. And they are using satellites to observe all kinds of precipitation patterns all over the world. And basically, like, before we could only place these things in certain spots that were easier to get to, and you can't place them out over the ocean,
right.
And you can't place them in the Andes because it's too rocky. Mm-hmm. This allows us to study the entire globe.
Right.
For the first time.
So they're following, they're basically tracking the movement of water around the planet on like a daily, a seasonal, a yearly basis. And what they hope to be able to gain from this is to predict when floods happen, because apparently a major flood happens every day around the Earth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And a lot of times those floods lead to landslides.
Uh-huh.
We saw firsthand in Guatemala what happens when a landslide comes down, remember?
Oh, yeah. We were standing there. And they said this is literally 12 feet higher than it was.
Yeah, we were standing on the remains of a village that got caught
yeah.
in the middle of the night, and there were people down there still.
Yeah, you could still see the swath that had been cut through the jungle and the mountainside.
Right, so they're hoping, okay, well, if we can figure out when a flood's coming, we can predict landslides in turn. So by tracking global precipitation, that's what they're hoping to be able to do with that.
Yeah, they're also using LIDAR, the LIDAR, surface topography system.
This is my second favorite one.
The list one?
Yeah.
And they're hopefully going to be able to track things like volcanoes, earthquakes, landslides, and erosion, but not wildfires.
No, not wildfires. That's crazy talk.
That is crazy talk.
But it's the same thing as with tracking precipitation as of 2 years ago. We had to physically put some sensor somewhere, and there were places we just couldn't get to.
Yeah.
And now that we have satellites, we can track that stuff. Same goes with this. Like, we used to have to be able to find a fault line, put sensors there,
yeah.
and then monitor that. With the LIST program, with LIDAR, they're using lasers to monitor fault lines and find new ones that we didn't know were there before, track their movement, and then
yeah.
use those to predict earthquakes, and then similarly predict volcanoes.
So listen to this.
Okay.
The resolution now they have is a 5-meter horizontal resolution with a precision of 4 inches. Previously, the best data we could get was 30-meter resolution with a 32-foot precision. So it went from 32 feet to 4 inches.
Right.
That's pretty good.
They'd be like, give or take 32 feet.
Yeah.
Now it's give or take 4 inches.
Yeah, with thanks to lasers.
Yeah.
So they could possibly detect volcanic activity before it happens.
Right, and the way that they're doing that, you would think, well, they're using thermal cameras. You'd be wrong. What they're doing is looking for land deformation. Apparently, before a volcano goes off, that land around it literally deforms. It swells due to pressure.
Yeah.
And since we are tracking topography now using this this program, we can say, oh, well, that crater wasn't 3 times larger than it is now.
Right.
Like a week ago, maybe a volcano is about to go off.
That's right. And it's not just volcanoes and natural disasters. They can also monitor erosion and topsoil loss, basically anything on the earth that's interesting. They can like really accurately closely monitor now.
Yeah.
And this said 2016. Is it already underway?
No, it's 2013, Chuck.
No, it says it was going to launch in 2016, but is it already going?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think it's launching in 2016 still.
Okay, so this is just the plan.
You're right. Yeah, no, they have a lot of, like, this just started.
Okay.
Like the, I think it might have been the GRACE program.
Yeah.
Started in 2002, and it's been going on. It is the GRACE program, the one with Tom and Jerry, right?
Yeah, that was 2002.
Right, and it had its 10th anniversary in 2012. I think that might have been the first project like this.
Right.
And now NASA's throwing like everything into this stuff, and we're just at the forefront, at the very beginning of this kind of thing. This is a very timely episode, frankly.
It is, actually. I think these new probes are even newer than the LIST program, right? That NASA's proposing to launch.
The one we were just talking about with the volcano deformation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a pair of satellites that monitor little bitty changes in the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's a funding thing because I don't think these two are even I think they're still just like in the proposition phase.
So I guess we should say like then they will be doing this. This is coming.
Yeah.
And like this particular project.
Yeah. And the precipitation one is launches in February of next year.
Yeah.
So it sounds as though these things are already happening, but I think it's just like this is how it's going to work.
It sounds as though they're already happening because of us. the tense we're using.
That's right.
We're using present. We should be using future perfect.
One of the problems with the satellites, though, is and with lasers, is clouds.
Right.
Because clouds get in the way. It's got to be a clear day to use most of this stuff.
Hold on. I know you love talking about clouds. I do, too. But before we go any further, what do you think about a message break?
That's a great idea. Stuff you should know.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so back to clouds.
Right.
They cause trouble with lasers and with satellites.
Yeah.
So you got to count on clear days. So it's not like these things are humming 24/7, 365.
No, weren't you surprised finding out that clouds are still an impediment to lasers?
No.
I would have thought, like, I mean, the projects we're talking about are still like, gee whiz, that.
Can't you shoot through a cloud with a laser?
I thought that it just seemed kind of like, well, what are you guys going to do about that? Because that's a pretty big obstacle.
Yeah. I guess you're right.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have an anti-seeding program.
Oh, yeah.
To disperse clouds.
Nice. So, Chuck, NASA doesn't need to turn its back fully on space. Like we said, it's still carrying out the Mars mission. What was after that? Are they going to Saturn?
I don't know.
Saturn, Uranus, maybe?
Yeah.
They're exploring some moon. I can't remember what's what. They haven't turned their back on space, and they don't need to because there's a huge threat from space bearing down on us constantly.
That's right, near-Earth objects.
Right, which I feel like we should do a podcast just on near-Earth objects.
So how detailed do you want to get here then?
Some.
Medium?
Sure.
Go watch the movie Armageddon.
All right.
Done.
Yeah.
Although that is Deep Impact and Armageddon were both, while fanciful, not too far off in that there are objects that come near the Earth, and we think if we can detect them soon enough that there is existing technology now that can throw these things off course.
Right, and Earth is constantly being bombarded every day about 100 tons of material.
That's a lot.
Like rain down on the Earth.
But yeah.
We're talking little particles, things that break up in the atmosphere.
Mostly like comet dust and stuff, right?
Right. But there are... NASA estimates about 1,000 objects that could collide with Earth that are a kilometer or more in diameter. It's 0.62 miles in diameter. And that if any one of these impacted Earth, which they do about every 10,000 years, it would be what's called a global catastrophe.
Actually, good news, buddy.
What?
That is every several hundred thousand years.
Oh, man. Okay, so what comes down every 10,000 years?
About every 10,000 years, asteroids larger than about 100 meters could hit the Earth, and that would just be like a local disaster.
So it would be like a one the size of a football field.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's not great if you're near it, but it's not like a what they would call a global disaster, like the end of the world type scenario.
And that's one that's like a kilometer in diameter, right?
Yeah, and it says every several hundred thousand years or so.
I feel a lot better, Chuck. Thank you.
Yeah. What are the chances that that's going to happen in the next, like, 40 years?
I don't know. Aren't we, like, on a – when was the last one? It was about a quarter of a million years ago, wasn't it?
I don't know, was it?
The one that formed the Chicxulub Club crater? I don't think I pronounced that correctly, but you know what I'm talking about, people who are familiar with that.
I do, or they do. But the point is, we need a lead time on this stuff.
Chicxulub Club?
The Chicxulub Club?
It's there's an X in there, but it's in Mesoamerica, so the X is like a hua.
Oh, it's pronounced Cthulhu.
No.
No?
It was close.
Okay.
The
Oaxaca.
It's like that.
Uh-huh.
But there's a chi and I believe a club afterwards. So I'm just going to say chi club crater.
Okay.
But I think that was longer ago than 100,000 years ago, the extinction event.
So you're saying we're due?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the good news is if we have a little bit of lead time, like a few years, supposedly there are things that we can do to knock these asteroids off course.
Like what?
Well, one is using nuclear fission weapons. You set it off. And the trick is you don't want to blow this thing up.
No, because then you might have a lot of problems.
Yeah, that's even worse. But it would just set it off course. And even if you set something off course by a few millimeters over the course of years, that could be enough.
Sure.
So it's not like they're looking to knock it miles away or anything.
Right.
Although in the movies, that's how they do it.
Yeah.
In the movies, that's how they did do it, I think.
Of course, we may mine them, which we talked about.
Yeah, asteroid mining.
Sure. And tracking these things has actually become something of a crowdsourced thing. There's NASA has this all-sky fireball network.
That sounds so not real.
Yeah, but it is. It's a real program they have where they have cameras that are connected to the internet that are constantly filming the night sky. Most of them are along the eastern seaboard.
We got one here in Georgia.
Yeah, and Alabama has them, Tennessee. Uh-huh. They're grouped in clusters. And actually, if you want to propose your location as a place to host one of these cameras, typically they're like on schools or things like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can submit an application, and if there's... There's really just like four criteria. It's like there can't be a lot of light pollution or a light nearby.
Yeah, that rules me out.
You have to be able to, you have to be connected to the internet.
Yeah, that rules me out.
Like a couple, a couple of other things. But it's like you can get a camera set up and be part of the All Sky Fireball Network.
That's pretty cool. I think the plan is to eventually have, 15 of these in place. And, I guess tracking fireballs.
Yeah. Which are good things to keep tabs on for sure.
You got anything else?
No, that's all the news about NASA.
I wish NASA would sponsor us, man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Like talk about someone we could stump for.
NASA?
Yeah.
Sure. Let's do it, NASA. What's your problem? You guys have deep pockets?
Yeah.
Let's see. If you want to know more about NASA, you can type that word into the handy search bar at HowStuffWorks.com. It'll bring up a bunch of articles. We love NASA here at HowStuffWorks and Stuff You Should Know. And since I said handy search bar, Chuck, it's time for listener mail.
Straight to listener mail.
Yeah. Oh, do you hear that chime? Man.
It's like 2009. All right. Dear guys and Jerry, I just got home from another 8-hour car trip with my hubby, during which we binge listened to Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah.
This has been our car trip ritual for about a year now. We actually moved to Atlanta, Kennesaw, last August, and we make pretty frequent trips to our hometown of St. Louis.
Well, that's a long car trip, I would say.
Yeah, it sure is. I wonder if they know that you can fly there really quickly. he introduced me to the podcast on our first trip down here, and I have to admit, I didn't have much hope. I'm a ballet teacher who loves arts and fiction and long hours with Netflix, and he is a self-taught programmer who loves biographies and doing math for fun in his free time. So when he told me what the show was, I was thinking, great, I'm going to feel dumb and bored, but we gave it a try anyway. I also have to admit, and this one is kind of funny, after listening to one or two episodes, I told him I didn't like it. He, not understanding how that was possible, asked me why not, and I said, dude, it's so condescending that the way they ask each other questions and converse as if they don't already know what the other person's going to say.
As if.
He sniffed me off the case right away, she says. So she's a true fan.
Yeah.
By saying, I don't think that's fake. I think they really don't write out a full script ahead of time.
Yeah,
believe it or not.
He's right.
He's right. Believe it or not, that changed everything, which might seem silly, but I bet you listened to a past episode and imagine it was totally scripted and rehearsed. You'd see what I mean. Now I recommend it to everyone.
I can't even conceive of how we would be able to generate the level of clumsiness that we rise to every episode.
Yeah. You couldn't write that.
Yeah.
So thanks, guys, for putting out a very entertaining program for people of all ages to enjoy and for being less sad than This American Life, which we also love. But sometimes we just don't have enough tissue and emotional resolve to listen to it. That is from Amber and Ben Studebaker.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks, Amber and Ben. Hey there. If you're on one of your road trips, drive safe. And drive safe to everybody out there who's listening on a road trip or on a long haul or on an airplane. Whatever. If you're listening to us right now and you're traveling, we hope it's a nice time.
Agreed.
If you want to tell us about those travels, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com. And you can join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the all-new 2014 Toyota Corolla.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/powersafely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.